Will you pray with me? Lord, now may the words of my mouth and may the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. In recent years, a growing number of churches have begun observing this Sunday, the Sunday after Easter Sunday, as Holy Humor Sunday, or as Bright Sunday, a day for celebrating God's gifts of joy and laughter. The practice apparently has its roots in various customs within different Christian traditions in history. In 15th century Bavaria, for instance, the Sunday after Easter was celebrated as Risus Paschalis, meaning God's joke, or the Easter laugh. It was a way of acknowledging that God had the last laugh over death, that the resurrection was seen as a great prank that God played on death. It's like the little girl who imagined that Jesus' first words as he came out of the tomb were, "Ta-da!" On God's Joke Sunday, priests would include funny stories and jokes in their sermons, and then people would get together after worship and have picnics and parties, play games, play pranks and practical jokes, and they had something called drenching customs, where the boys would get the girls wet, and then the girls would get the boys wet. And apparently, these events could become rather raucous celebrations, because in the 17th century, Pope Clement officially prohibited the observance of such a Sunday, claiming that it was being abused. Of course, it wasn't the first time that religious folks treated celebration with suspicion. Jesus himself came eating and drinking, and people called him a glutton and a drunkard, a friend to tax collectors and sinners. And of course, that last part was right. He was a friend to tax collectors and sinners. He broke the boundaries of cultural expectations by sharing a table with them. Jesus never let other people's categories lock him in. And in the end, even the category we call death could not hold him. At the heart of God's reality, the surprising joy of abundant life bursts through our preconceived limits. So, Holy Humor Sunday, or Risus Paschalis, or Bright Sunday, is not any kind of official church holy day. But it certainly does speak to something we need. In the church, we celebrate Easter not as a day, but as a whole season. Actually, every Sunday throughout the year is supposed to be considered a little Easter. It's just that most Sundays don't rise to that high level of expectation and celebration that we experience on the actual Sunday of Easter. In fact, this first Sunday after Easter also has one more name, Low Sunday, which is supposed to refer to the fact that the normal worship service seems subdued after all the high celebration of Easter Sunday. But the truth is, the term Low Sunday has also come to refer to the attendance, which is typically a fraction of what it was the previous week. The interesting thing is that things are really just going back to normal today. Normal worship service, normal attendance. But once you've had that high of Easter celebrations, or other big moments for that matter, Even normal seems low, doesn't it? The truth is, sometimes normal seems low even when it's not connected to big celebrations. Who of us hasn't felt the low of life in our world these days? The news is filled with violence, trauma, global political uncertainty. It's always been this way, of course, but now we get to watch it in real time. We carry the scary news of the world in our pockets so that we can scroll through it as we wait in line for coffee or groceries. We set it on our nightstands so that it can be the first thing that fills our sleepy eyes in the morning and the last thing that flows into our burdened brains at night. For the last 10 years, the American Psychological Association has been running an annual nationwide Stress in America survey to examine the sources and impact of stress in our lives. This year, for the first time since the survey began being conducted, the results showed a statistically significant increase in stress, with fully two-thirds of respondents saying they are stressed about the future of our nation and our world. Many of us carry around more stress in a week than our ancestors did in a year or more. That stress isn't always grounded in reality either. Sometimes the level of stress doesn't accurately reflect our actual threat. But the director of the research on stress points out that whether we're actually in more danger or just believe that we are doesn't really matter. Perception drives behavior. When I was a child, I was scared a lot. I would overhear the nightly news as my parents watched it, and I would lie in bed at night with my eyes open, keeping watch for all the crime I was certain was out to get me. One night when my father came in to tuck me in, I told him how scared I was about whatever particular awful thing I had heard on the news that night. And he explained to me that the people on the news had to tell about the bad stuff, or nobody would watch. He said that the bad stuff is news because it's not ordinary. He pointed out how boring it would be for the newscasters to come on each day and say things like, "A father kissed his daughter goodnight tonight," even though there was more of that happening than all the kidnappings and robberies I was so afraid of. The ordinary good stuff of life just isn't news. Which is why we so often miss it, right? And then sometimes, even when we try so hard to find little things to be happy about and to celebrate the little bits of goodness around us, someone will come along and smack us down for it, just like Pope Clement did to those Bavarian churches. So last week, millions of people watched and posted about the live streaming of April the giraffe in New York, who gave birth to a little calf the day before Easter. It's a little thing. But a friend of mine was so excited about this, and she posted about the birth on Facebook that day, and then a friend of hers came along and wrote under it, "Now can we get back to something important?" And he then went on to take time out of his day to make a list of all the horrible things happening in the world that we needed to be paying attention to. His implication being, given the state of the world, celebrating something like an animal birth was frivolous, and he was infuriated, apparently. We do live in serious times in a world with serious difficulties, which has always been the case. But in the midst of the stress, anger, burden, sadness, and fear of it all, we know something else is true, too. We know with the psalmist, God is our refuge. God is our security, our comfort, our deliverance, our protection, our future, and our joy. The psalm this morning is a perfect psalm for Easter. It's a beautiful reminder that God is always in the business of life, not death. God is always in the busyness of life. And that God's presence is filled with joy and with pleasures, even in the midst. And that our whole beings can be claimed by this. Heart, soul, even our bodies can rest secure, the psalmist says. I keep the Lord always before me, he says. And because God is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore, my heart is glad, and my soul rejoices. My body also rests secure. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the solidity of this? An immovable sense of security and trust that results in joy. For those of us who feel so pulled by the demands and concerns of each day, so tossed about by the ups and downs of whatever is going on in our lives or in the world, it can be hard to imagine this kind of steady joy. Not a superficial, I'm going to pretend that everything's okay either. The psalmist is making an audacious claim. It springs from where his heart is. And it can feel like a stretch for some of us. He says, "The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. I have a goodly heritage." It sort of sounds like maybe he has good fortune, the good fortune of land and inheritance, so he can afford to trust. He gives credit to God for the blessings, and he can be happy. But this is an Easter psalm. It's for all of us, not just those of us who happen to find ourselves in good circumstances. Isn't it true that all of us have found ourselves somehow, by the grace of God, in the path of life? It's a path that runs from the cross, through the empty tomb, into our own lives. These are the boundary lines for us. We have a goodly heritage, an inheritance of full joy, a destiny that moves us towards life and gladness, even in the midst of challenges we can't see our way through. If we can see that we have an inheritance that has been secured for us in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, then we can find this immovable trust that holds even in the midst. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a faith that leads to trust, that leads to joy, so complete that it encompasses your heart, your soul, your body, your being, your days? We came to church on Easter and heard again the great, big, earth-shaking news that Christ is alive and that God has broken the power of death. God has broken the power of anything that has us in its grip. But then we go back to our daily lives and our regular Sundays. And then what? This is the thing. All those little ordinary parts of our lives can be transformed, will be transformed, when we see by the light of the resurrection. When we see through that lens, then every goodness is a foretaste of the fullness of joy. And every difficulty is held within a larger context that we can trust. A context of love. A context that says joy will have the last word. When we put our confidence in the God who pulls life out of the grave, whose joy blows down all our limits, then we can begin to look and see what God is doing now, even in the midst of pain and fear and anger and death. So the big things, like elections that rock the world or violence that shatters security, the big things are taken seriously, but not given ultimate power. And the little things, like a parent kissing a child goodnight, or a giraffe giving birth to a calf, the little things can be tiny glimpses of the true fullness of God, signs of the joy that holds us all. Christ plays in 10,000 places, breaking through our ordinary experiences to show us love, to give us joy, to say, ta-da! Priest and writer Henry Nouwen, who was no stranger to pain, woundedness, grief, wrote, "Joy does not simply happen to us. We have to choose joy and keep choosing it every day." My friend Catherine lost a good friend and a close cousin earlier this year, too young and too soon, and she decided for Lent to try to make a particular practice of joy in the face of grief. She chose a practice that didn't sound particularly revolutionary or weighty. She just decided that every day in Lent, she would find a reason to claim why that day was the best day. She said her only rule was that she could not be sarcastic or purposely funny. It had to be a real thing. Sometimes the things were big, and sometimes they were little. But she said, "I found myself constantly reframing things and always seeking a way to make that day the best day, no matter what happened." She said, "As far as I can tell, this hasn't changed the world one bit. Friends way too young continue to receive cancer diagnoses, and the world and national news is best labeled as what made today scary and horrifying. But I have noticed a change in me," she said. "I've been able to keep a broader focus on the things that matter in my life during a busy season, more than ever before. I'm grateful for the reminder to name the people and moments in our lives that make today and every day the best day. Today is bright Sunday. Or maybe it is low Sunday, depending on how you look at it. Or maybe it's the same thing, really. The lows in life, all the ordinary moments, even the difficult ones, are filled with the brightness of God.